All right, this is Beth Smith. I'm over here at the home of Chris and Paula Shermer this morning. 130, no, that's the downtown, isn't it? 1015 I Street is where they live. They are the owners of Master Electric. And they're going to talk to us today about what they see in Salida and about the Christmas Mountain, which they were both so active in putting up there. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, Beth. I'm just fine. I'm looking out watching the snow this morning.
Oh, yes. I should say, too, this is November the 20th in 2004. We've got a good snowstorm going. How are you, Paula?
Just fine.
Well, good. Who gets to start?
I guess I'll start.
Okay.
I'll talk about Paul and I. We met in high school in Denison, Sherman, Texas, in 1967. And we lived down there a few years. Tried to get married in 1969 and then succeeded in 1970 and moved to Denver, Colorado at that time. And I went to college for a couple years. Paula supported me like she has through all the years like that. Had to excuse me, that's a pretty soft spot. And she's just been my strength through all the years. And we moved here in 73. I was going to become an electrician at that time, so went to work for a local outfit, and we had a baby on the way. It was born in May of that year, so we got here and supposed to make a certain amount of money. It ended up being we made a little bit less than what we were supposed to make, so we would have left, but we were too broke to leave at that time. So luckily for the town, we never made any more money to get out of town at that point, you know. So.
And did you start business down there on First Street?
Not on First Street. We had a music store that we started, a record store that we started up in 1975. Yeah. Yes, we lived in town a couple of years. I'd worked for, like I said, another electrical contractor. You have to put so many years in as an electrician before you can get your master's license and become a company, a business like that. So we had a music store for about 8 years, and I worked for various different electrical outfits. I was a building inspector and electrical inspector for the county for a couple of years back in the first of, 1978-79, I guess, 1978-79. And then in 1985, we closed up the music store in 83, I think it was, and we decided that it was time to open up a business and start Master Electric at that point. So, but through the years, we had a couple kids born and raised, went through the Salida School District, seeing good times and bad times, from when we were here. When we first moved here, North F Street, or Lower F Street, as it was called at that time, was buildings being torn down, and all the plate glass windows were boarded up, and town was in need of paint, and it was just really a poor time. The railroad had just pulled out, and the city was reeling from the extra income from that, and the only thing that was really surviving for it was, or making it survive, was Climax at that time. So,
but that quit soon too.
Yeah, that was back in the, that was when we closed the music store down. Mm-hmm. Is when my Climax closed up. There just wasn't any luxury money around at that point. Everybody was really hard at just trying to make a living at that time. So it was real tough. But in 85, it was still tough times, but I figured I could starve just as well on my own as starving for working for these other electrical outfits, because there's always a slow time through the winter time and stuff. So I got my favorite and best partner to partner up with me again to do Master Electric at that time. So, and that started a whole new thing 30 years ago, I guess.
Down on First Street then?
We were on First Street at that time. Yeah, we moved from North F Street, where we had our first music store, to the store on First Street. And that's where Master Electric started in 85. So, and went from there. We were living upstairs and had the business downstairs at that time.
Mm-hmm. 132 East First Street, right?
132 East First
Street.
Right. And we lived at 128. That's one of the few buildings downtown that doesn't have a half address. Most of the places have 128 and a half or 132 and a half for the upstairs apartment, but it had a full number for its upstairs apartment at that time. So.
And you did a nice job of redecorating this spring.
Yes, we did a lot of stuff. And actually, we're trying to rent the upstairs now as a old office suites and things like that upstairs, kind of keep the commercial character of the town downtown down there, So it's kind of returned it back to the early 1900s look of stuff up there. So
good. We need more of that.
Yes, I think so, too. We need to revitalize the downtown. It's really hurting right at this point, but it's just another downtime. It's very cyclical in nature as far as Salida goes downtown.
Right,
so.
I can understand that. Mm-hmm. What do you do for Master Electric, Paula?
I'm the office manager, so I do all that, insurance, financial planning, payroll.
Pay the bills.
Accounts payable, anything that needs to be done.
But
and hiring and firing and everything that goes along with being office manager. And I've done that for, well, we've hit our 20th year. We're going on our 20th anniversary. July 4th.
Yeah, right. July 4th, yeah. We opened up the 1st of July, but we always claim July 4th as our day of independence. So, you know.
All right.
Yeah. So it was all right there close together at that time. So. Of course, I'm not sure what we're independent from. You know. We still have a boss, you know, so it doesn't really matter at
Sometimes
that point.
You don't want to ask those kind of questions.
We figure the government's our boss.
Yeah, the government's our boss at this point, yeah.
And that's our customers.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, there was a mountain there. What do you call it? North of town or east of town? This town is on an odd angle, you know. And all of a sudden, it's got a Christmas mountain on it. And I know you did a lot for that. Can you give us the story about what happened?
Well, it's a little bit hazy in our mind. It's been through some very long and tough times. It's quite the mountain now. It started out in the summer of 1989, I think it was. And a few of the founding fathers, movers and shakers of the town, Jim Gable, John Bayouk, Joe Michaud from the Chamber, a lot of the downtown merchants and like that had come up with an idea to help the town kind of get back on its feet a little bit. They wanted to do something to kick off the Christmas season to help them keep people downtown and to increase the amount of, increase their financial gains through the Christmas time period. So they said, well, let's take this mountain, and the city always put a star up on top of it for Christmas time, and said, well, let's make it a little bit more than that, kind of make it as a draw to bring more people to town, get some of the big city money out here in the small town instead of having all the small town money go to the big city. And that was the whole reason behind lighting the mountain at that point, it'd be nice to say, oh, it's because we wanted to do something really nice for this and that. But the first and foremost thing was to try to increase the money flow downtown,
Now, who had the idea? Who originated that?
Boy, that's a good question. It's Paul and I were talking about that this morning, and I think this could have been a toss-up between Jim Gable and John Bayouk. Jim Gable was the manager of the cable company back at that time. It was called, what was it called? Slide a cable or something like that, some slide of something, but it was a TV cable company. And between the two of them, they were both really hard pushers at it, But I think, between the two, I think it was Jim Gable that had the first idea, even though he moved on later and John Bayouk became the real pusher and money raiser and stuff for it, So it was kind of a shared star between those two guys.
So what was the first thing you put up there?
First thing we put up there was, we tried a lot of different ideas. It was, nobody I think had ever lit a mountain before. And depending on where you looked at it, how you viewed the mountain is you got the best view from it. So we thought that meaning Paul and I and Ty, my journeyman electrician has been with me for 18 years now.
What's his name?
Ty Hood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ty's been with me since almost the start of the business. But we would sit and brainstorm through the evenings and we thought that we could reflect light from some banks of lights back off the mountain back into town, because nobody wanted to see the light bulbs at that time. They said, well, we just want to see the mountain lit up. We really don't want to see the light bulbs, which made good sense. It made it a little bit harder to light at that point, but we figured we'd get plenty of reflection. We had 120,000 watts of light up there in this first year that we tried to light it. It didn't turn out so well, we thought we did a pretty good job. If we'd had a little more snow and, three or four more months to build it had been a good thing, but our first dabble at lighting the mountain started in, well, it was probably September of 89, and we worked on it fairly diligently until November when we tried to light it for Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving lighting time, so.
The town had originally gotten $300-$500 together, and Christmas Mountain has always been donations, and for commercial lighting, $3,500 might buy you a pole and a light. So what we did is built the banks of lights to save a lot of money in order to put them on these poles. And I noticed in the book there that the inmates had put in time digging the ground to put these poles in. There was one original pole on the mountain that lit up the star. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that makes it so controversial in this area is I think that mountain has stood for a lot of I think it resembles and is the emblem of Salida. And I think that's why through the years that I think it was the WPA had handpicked and shoveled the road to go up there. And then also there was a class group that got together that put in the S.
That was class of 1932, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Something mm-hmm. like that, yeah.
And then also at some time, and I don't know when, somebody had put up the cupola that was up on top. And I think that's why there was so much controversy about this being put on the mountain, was because it is the emblem of Salida. And we really pushed to make sure that it was a Christmas tree and nothing religious, because then the controversy would really start.
Between church and state and all that
and,
other stuff.
And there were people that wanted to do that, and we really pushed to make it stay as a Christmas tree instead of something else. I know through the years organizations had wanted to put advertising up there, and Mr. Bevington wanted to put a tramway.
Yeah, he wanted to go and put a tramway
uh-huh.
there sometime, and he had
and,
big
and
balloons.
The people feel that that's their mountain, and they want it to stay their mountain. And so I think that's why there was so much controversy about it. People were for it. Some people were against it. Nobody knew how it was going to turn out or even how to do it. The electrical engineer that was supposed to have come in said, well, it's never been done, so they didn't know. That was as much as we were offered in how to do it. So it was all trial and error. I was on the back of the deck while Chris and Ty were up on the poles aiming the lights, and what they couldn't believe when they got down from the hill was when I was telling them that, yes, it was reflecting on the mountain, they were aimed up into the air. That's how odd light is on reflection and distance. And so it was really, really surprised them when they got down, because when we coordinated together on when I was seeing it and when you could see the light, it was pointed straight up in the air. So it was real kind of trial and error. Certain colors aren't viewed from a certain distance. And so we were trying to do kind of a wash of an outline of a tree with reflective light.
And it just because of the immensity of the mountain, it just didn't work out. We were really counting on a snow cover, you know, to help out reflect the light, the color of the light and things. And as you know, in Salida, even though it's snowing today, it's really hit and miss as if we ever get much snow cover on Tenderfoot up there. But that was a real learning experience. You know, you could see and we could read books up there, and it was so bright from all the light that we had up there when you were up on the hill. But from down in Salida, you just couldn't see it. You know, the angle of reflection of the light was completely wrong for seeing that, you know. So just because that people going overhead in jets and like that would have had a great view of the mountain. They probably looked really nice. You know, public service took a picture from Methodist Mountain, you know, when we had some snow cover of the hill. And it's really a nice picture. They put it on the front page of their magazine at that time when it was public service. So it really did what we wanted it to a point. It just couldn't be viewed from the city center like we'd wanted, hoped it would be. So through that, we got everybody is real sharp with their pencils around town here. The letters to the editor were very heavy for a while, you know. There was some good and some bad, you know. I got interviewed on a TV station out of the Springs about it and stuff. So, you know, I got my 15 minutes of fame from it, so I guess that was okay, you know. It wasn't quite the 15 minutes I wanted, but it was still 15 minutes, you know. But, you know, we could have just as easily, you know, threw up our hands after that first year and said, heck with it, you know. But, you know, Ty and Paulo just wouldn't let me back down from it, you know. And so we kind of went through and said, we're going to see it through to the end, you know. So
good.
And that's so then it started from that point. And once we saw what we could do and what our limitations were, I think it made us change our whole idea as to how we wanted to do the tree, you know. So instead of, you know, trying to reflect light, then we decided that it's time to outline the tree and go back with Christmas lights and stuff. So that started the planning, you know, then brought in the surveyors, and, you know, Bigelow did quite a bit of surveying for us, Mr. Bigelow, for this surveying outfit to help lay out the scallop edges of the tree and the garland, and the city moved the star, which was on top of the building, over to the left a little bit so that the star was on top of the tree, because the tree, you know, the top of the hill is a little bit to the left, to the left side of the building that's up there, so. And Walmart helped us out a bunch at first. You know, they donated tons and tons of Christmas tree lights and stuff like that, you know, just to get it, because we were just doing it with conventional Christmas lights at first, and we used to have time clocks on each pole that was up there to turn the lights on, and we'd have to have seven people up there within the freezing night, you know, the night after Thanksgiving to turn them on, you know. We could hear the people singing songs down in not the building alone, but the Pueblo Bank and Trust parking lot,
yeah,
you know,
right,
and chocolate and stuff. And it was really neat to be up there and hear the singing and stuff like that, and then turn the lights all on. But it was very cold and dark up there. There was one year that it was started out really nice and came into blizzard on us. It was probably, 92 or 93 maybe? Can't remember exactly when. Had a blizzard come in that night, and it shook, you know, chased everybody out from downtown, but it was really cold on the hill that night. But through the years, we'd changed, added more garland to it, put decorations on it. It wasn't just Ty and I that did it. We had a really good mountain crew of people up there that helped out quite a bit. Mr. Bement was up there. He was one that was really in charge of all the decorations and things.
The Steventon,
that's what it was. Uh-huh. Yeah, the Steventons. And gosh, I can't remember all
the people. We had about 20 people that
really
came up just about yearly.
Yeah.
Delnay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Bob Delnay, as a matter of fact. Yes, yeah. As a matter of fact. And they were, those guys were really, they were retired, so they had a lot more time to put towards it. And they really kind of took it underneath their wings. They made up all the decorations. They'd spend, you know, a lot of time through the summer, you know, making decorations up where they're actually driving rebar in the ground to lay these large displays of lights out and things. So I kind of became more just the head of the mountain crew at that point. You know, there was the fundraising crew, and then there was the parade crew from downtown, and I was the mountain crew, you know. So so I had to get my guys up there all the time. You know, my guys, meaning anybody that would volunteer to come up on the Saturday before Thanksgiving to string lights and stuff. So, but that's, it's really been a community effort. You know, I kind of got thrust in the forefront because I knew electricity, but there were so many other people that really helped out just to, you know, offer their time and, you know, just their expertise and things to make it so it worked.
Okay. Sylvania donated allowed us, Phillips allowed us to buy lights at a discount in order to...
Right at their factory cost on them, you know, for when we first did the first lights up there and stuff. So I called in a lot of favors at first, you know, from my electrical suppliers down in Canyon City and Pueblo at that time. You know, they donated a lot of stuff to us, and they said, well, don't say who we are, because then everybody else will be asking us for it. But they liked the project, you know, and they, you know, thought that we were going and growing business, and so they wanted to do that to help us out so that we would use them to buy, you know, more materials from it for at a future date, you know. So it was, everybody was, you know, playing their trump card at that time just to get it off the ground for the first time. So
good. Well, it took money anyway in some places. Where did that come from?
Well, all the money came from donations. We didn't want to have it where it would be a thing that the city would have to come up with it, because then it would become a political ball. And so we wanted to make sure that if we could did it for the city, if the city liked it enough, that not the city, but the people liked it enough, then they would donate money towards it. And then we could see if we were wasting our time doing it, or if it was really something that the townsfolk really enjoyed doing and really enjoyed seeing. And it's, you know, really blossomed. At first, the banks would pay for the electric bill through the year, you know, and then we'd have fundraisers, and the advent of the Christmas mountain decorations would come up, you know, which are the ornaments that they're selling now and stuff. So we used to have Christmas cards and things, anything to raise some money for it. But it was all donated money, you know, that went through the hillside. Back in 97 or 98, we finally had enough money backpiled to go ahead and put all the wiring underground, which before we'd have to string out rolls and rolls and rolls of, you know, wire and Romex and stuff just to light the hill. And at that time, we had enough money to hire a contractor to go up there and actually dig ditches on the hillside to bury all these conduits and, you know, power line stuff, put it all in the ground so that in preparation for, you know, service organizations to take over the project of Christmas Mountain and just bring up volunteers, just to all they have to do is, you know, we call it plug and play, just plug the lights in and set them up, you know. So it wasn't so much we had to have an electrician there to run wires out and stuff, you know.
Did you have any trouble with vandals? People going up there and tearing out the lights?
We would always, when we living downtown like we did, we'd always gaze out at the mountain from our back deck, and we could see kids up there, you know, fooling around. We'd see lights come on or lights go off, you know, because we're always on the, you know, the Christmas mountain watch back there. And we did for a couple of years, you know. I mean, that's just, it seems like the kids just don't have enough in town to do, you know, other than get into mischief, you know. But it was, you know, it was, I guess we got upset about it because it was like our little baby up there, you know, so we didn't want it to happen, you know.
Well, we were going to be the ones up there fixing it in the cold and the wind. And a lot of it, you know, some of it was animal life running through the strands, and sometimes it was wind, and sometimes it was vandals, but just about daily we had to go up there. Sometimes we got a break and went up every other day, but just about daily we had to go up to fix something that either came apart or wasn't working. So it was a lot of babysitting once it was up.
Yeah.
And we'd go up once, sometimes twice a day or every other day to fix it. And if something was out, somebody would give us a call and say, hey, you know.
Hey, your mountain's out.
Something's not working.
It was our mountain, you know. All of a sudden, hey, your mountain's out, you know. Yeah. And that was like when we were using just residential grade lighting and stuff. So we found an outfit out of Texas that made commercial grade, you know, Christmas lights and stuff. So we're, you know, those strings of lights now are 150 feet long instead of putting 25 foot strings together and stuff.
How big are the lights?
So the lights are just little 5 watt lights. You know, they're just regular. Oh, they're kind of like, well, yeah, they're just the usual Christmas lights, the C7 5-watt lights. And it's just amazing how well you can see them from that distance, you know.
Right.
But with 150-foot strings, it cuts down so you didn't have the problem of all the different connections coming apart and stuff. So, you know, so through the years, we've upgraded the material used on the hill and stuff, you know, whenever there was money available for it and like that. So, you know, nothing seemed to come easy up there on the hill. It was always do something and patch it together until you were at your wit's end. And then somebody would come across, well, let's do this, you know. So, but it was, with the Christmas Mountain Committee, I don't know how strong it is now, but before we would have quite a few meetings and stuff, you know, Floyd Cummins and Bonnie Bondurant was a very big driving force up there. We had the city of Slide was always a big help. So, Mr. Delnay.
And public service wasn't like $900 a year to run the lights.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is now, but that's quite a bit of money just to run the lights.
Yeah, and actually, the banks would take care of the light bill for it. They would pay the electricity bill for the hill,
mm-hmm.
which is actually, you know, for being a thing, it was actually very expensive for no longer than it was on. You know, it was like $900 for maybe 30 days of the lights because we turned it on just after Thanksgiving and turned it off at the first of the year. So, and then of course, you know, like I said, we added things to it. The heart and the S weren't necessarily always it wasn't necessarily always there to begin with. You know, that was later on thing. And then we built a control box that would flash the heart and the S all the time. So, and then we always thought in it, you know, that would be a thing that the city would use later on. They could do things for Halloween, you know, or Valentine's Day. I always thought was a big day, you know, something like that. They could use that for, you know, to bring it on for that time. And they liked it well enough and had enough money at that time to keep it going year round, which is pretty cool, you know. So we're happy to see that.
One time I saw a bee up there on the mountain.
there was a couple times. These are pretty bronco rabid fans we have here in Salida. And a couple times the little building on the top of the hill turned orange overnight. But the time that the S turned into a bee was the last Super Bowl, I guess. Or not the second to the last Super Bowl. And a few of us got together and decided that we were going to restring the S, make it a B, and make it orange, you know. And it turned out real well. So I mean, love our Broncos around here. So it was great.
People woke up the next morning and they were wondering what it was supposed to mean because it was the B and then the heart. So they thought B love.
Yeah, B love. Yeah, they thought it was B love, you know.
But that's, I think, why that mountain has always been so important. I mean, schools have always, at the end of graduation, they would turn it purple, and everybody would get mad. And then it's like, well, why does it have to be white? I mean, purple's okay. But I think that's one thing that has just been an insignia of the area. If you notice the kids when they draw their pictures for the newspaper, it almost always is Tenderfoot Mountain or Christmas Mountain USA, you know, with the heart and the S. And so I think it's a very important symbol of the area.
Where did you get this name, Christmas Mountain USA?
They had back, I think it was the first or second year they're trying to do fundraising. And it was, there were several different names, and they, like most ways to get a little bit more support for the mountain, they would put it out, and you could vote for a certain name, you know, so much money for whichever name got the most money won. There was Salida Borealis, which I really kind of liked, you know, but that didn't do so well in the
Well, border. We liked that because that one was mine.
But there was a Salida Mount or Salida Christmas Mountain, or anyhow, there was like 3 or 4 different names. I think it's right up here.
Yeah.
And they were... it was the first Christmas Mountain USA was the one that came up with the most, so.
Oh, I can't find it in here that quick.
Yeah.
But that was when Nancy Sager was quite involved also.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes. Yeah, all the old-timers that are around town here still are really...
And in the end, I think it did wind up doing what people wanted, was to get people downtown to shop Salida, to keep the money in this area, to, I mean, just for the economy. Once money leaves this area, it's gone threefold. So they try to have a big kickoff for the area, for the retailers that work so hard. And they have, you know, two seasons, summer and the Christmas time, to make their money. So that's not a lot of time for retailers, and it gets pretty dry in between spells, between Christmas and summer. And that's what's worked so nice, is they've got Monarch to keep people here. They've got the rafting, the recreation. And that's one of the things that brought us to this area, was the beauty and recreation and the hometown feel. And I think to raise your kids in this area is pretty incredible.
Good.
Especially as comparison to coming from a large town, there's no way that I'd want to raise a child in a large city these days. You probably wouldn't want to be a teacher in the large cities.
Right. How tall is that Christmas tree on the mountain?
I knew you were going to ask that. You know.
600 feet.
600 feet?
600?
Okay. Is that what it said in here?
That's what I was thinking.
I thought it was 550 feet. Yeah, it's really tall. It's not so much the tallness as how steep it is. And with the loose rock and footing up there, you have to be part mountain goat to really climb on the hill up there. I have to hand it to Steve Borbus and the way he's organized the Christmas Mountain Committee at this point for the lighting of the tree and stuff. He's very organized. You know, all the ornaments are put together. He can set people off with bags of ornaments to put them up, put the lights up and stuff. He's really done a wonderful job, you know, continuing on the legacy of the mountain and doing the lights the way he has. He's really be commended. He's kind of got it. They asked me a couple years before we quit doing it if we were going to do it, and I said no, this is our last year, next year we won't do it, and this is our last year, next year we won't do it. And then finally I said, last year was the last year we were going to do it. And poor Steve kind of got it dropped in his lap.
2 weeks before it was supposed to go up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we kept telling everybody, we gave you 2 years notice that we're only going to do this for 2 more years, and nobody believed us.
Yeah. He's taken over.
He did it for 10 years.
And so the last 2 weeks, he stepped up and learned how to do it and got it organized. And so he's continued since, and they're up on the hill today.
Yeah, in the blizzard today. So I feel sorry for him today, but it's a real Christmas feeling up there today.
Give me an estimate. How many lights are on that tree?
How many lights on that tree? Gosh.
I thought it was something like 50,000.
No, it wasn't 50,000. There are, I would say, there's probably 3,000 or 4,000 lights on that tree. You know, and yeah, it's been just long enough from the time that I've worked on it up there that I kind of forgot. I used to be able to rattle those numbers off like nobody's
sure.
business. You know? But each of them are like little 5-watt lamps, little 5-watt bulbs, and you know, there's probably, I would say, I know that there's better than 2 miles of lights up there by the time you get it all stretched end to end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and if you got a 5-watt light every foot, you know, so that's 10,000, that's 20,000 lights, I guess. So that's probably about right, about 20,000 lights. Wow.
Yeah, we've had contests through the years and on of how many and this and that. We used to know all that.
Yeah.
You can tell we haven't gone through the books lately to remember all this
detail.
Yeah.
Is it really the world's largest Christmas tree?
It really is the world's largest Christmas tree. I don't know of any place else that has a tree that's that large, you know, as far as one to be let up with and stuff. You know, it's kind of nice that, like Paula was saying, that the way the kids always draw it is their picture of their Christmas tree and stuff. So it's all right. Our daughter won a prize 1 year as a drawing. They had a Christmas tree drawing competition 1 year. So she had plenty to look at back there. She won first prize on it that year.
All right.
So she was real pleased. Yeah. In fact, I still have it up at the store with a little ribbon on it that she'd won first place.
Yeah. I heard a lot of airplanes going over looking at it.
Yeah, that's what I heard too, that they actually go over through the time of the year. They actually go a little bit out of their way so that the people on the airplane can see it at that time. We went over one time, but it wasn't through the winter time. It was like in the spring or the fall or something, and we actually saw a Salida, you know, from the view of the plane. It was like we were coming back from the West Coast for something. I think we went to Las Vegas or something like that. No, that was in the winter. So sometime, and you could actually see Tenderfoot when you went over. So, you know, that would probably be quite the thing to see, because it would be really small, but it would be quite impressive from that high up in the air. So
the world's biggest Christmas tree might look small from up there.
Yeah, I think so. At 30,000 feet.
It's big enough to be seen, though.
Yeah. A lot of people go out of their way to see it.
That's it.
And some people through the years have asked, well, why is the tree not green? Trees are green. Well, green wasn't a color that could be viewed from that distance.
That would show
and,
up.
So that's why it's outlined
show,
in red and not green. And blue doesn't, you can't see it at all. And we, through the years, we did all this testing on the different colors to see what you could see from that distance and height. And the colors that are up there were the colors that were more easily viewed. So that's why it is the color that it is.
Yeah, and then after Christmas Mountain took off for so long, then Holiday Park came into being, you know, which had more things to the downtown area. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of nice the way that it's, you know, it's taken off and run, and then spawned other activities go along with it too. You know, even though they're for different ideas and like that, it's still all at the same time. So, you know, it's still more of a thing to keep people downtown and to give them something to do for the Christmas season and like that. So,
and the parade of lights and. Mm-hmm.
Which
Santa.
This year is going to be a big year, I guess. HGTV House and Garden, I guess, is coming in this week, this Thanksgiving. You know, which is 2004 of November or whatever, 25th or whatever, to keep the dates right, you know. First time we've made the big time with it, I guess, you know. So, so it's going to be really exciting to see. You know, I hope the town really does a lot this year to, you know, do something different, you know, make it a little bit more enjoyable. I guess we're going to have a real motorized parade this year instead of a stationary parade. So that's going to be pretty neat. Hope the weather's good. So.
Are there going to be any new ornaments up there?
I guess from what I understand, they're supposed to be planting some new ornaments for up there. You know, they've been driving the rebar and stuff up there to string the ornaments on, or that's what I've heard anyway. I haven't seen, so being away from it for a couple of years is in the midst of setting it up and like that, that you know, we're kind of spectators now, which is pretty neat.
Right.
Too, you know?
Well, you did your work.
Yeah, we got our 10 years in on it, so it's somebody else's turn now.
All right,
you know?
That's fine. Well, thank you for telling us all about Christmas Mountain, USA. We'll be there to see it the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, right.
When they turn on the lights.
All right.